Hello, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 177 of Cyclocross Radio. It's another episode of
The Media Pit
with Zach and with Michael. He's back. He's got his puns loaded and ready to go. I will apologize in advance for all of them. But before we get there, let's talk about our sponsors. I know you know who they are, unless you're a new listener to The Media Pit. And if you are, thanks for tuning in. I'm going to get through this really fast. Whoop! This is a performance tool. It's changing the way people track their fitness and optimize their training. I got one on my wrist right now. I'm actually back to trying to start training again, which is awesome because Whoop it, like, you know, calibrated me for somebody who sits around and edits all day long. So now I'm actually running and riding my bike and working out and doing all that kind of stuff. So it's recalibrating, telling me that, hey buddy, it's great that you're active again, but slow it down. Been going a little hard. You need a day off. You need some rest. You're not operating at your optimum output. And I know that from Whoop. So it also monitors my sleep, which is a huge thing for me. It's the 3.0 band. That's what they're going to send you for free because it's included in your 12 or 18 month membership. It's all app based. So you get to go to your app on your phone, check out how you're doing. You can't sit there and just stare at any output on your wrist, which is kind of cool. It just kind of does its work. And then you get to check in whenever you want during the day and see how you're doing. 15% off a 12 or 18 month membership by going to whoop.com, putting in the code WAP. Our other sponsor, Works Tools. Works has been an amazing partner for the Wide Angle Podium Network, and you can gear up for your spring racing season by going to yourcleanbike.com, entering the code GEARUP, GEARUP at checkout, and you're going to get 15% off the 2020 Works Cycling Package. There are things like the Pegasus Multifunction Work Table, which unfolds into the ideal platform for working on your bike at home or on the roads or the trails or wherever you want to bring it. It just folds up, throw it in the car, and you're good to go. The Sidekick Portable Work Table, lightweight, compact enough to throw in the trunk so that wherever you go, you have a workstation or even a table set up before and after the rides. You got the Clamping Jaw Horse, which makes a quick repair or clean up a breeze. And all of this is in addition to what got us into Works in the first place, which is the HydroShot, the power washer that's battery powered, that works on the Works Power Share batteries that you can just use in any of the tools that you buy from them. Don't take my word for it. Go to yourcleanbike.com, enter the code GEARUP, and get 15% off everything on that page. Finally, check out wideanglepodium.com. We got some really great stuff up there. Hey, we have this this parts bin feed that you can subscribe to, where recently there's been these shows that we're calling the Green Room. You know, we talk about the Green Room here. I know the Slow Ride talks about the Green Room. I think the other shows do too. It's basically the conversations that we're having before the microphones get turned on and we're starting to record. And there's usually a lot of good stuff there. So we're getting different hosts from different shows. They're getting together. They're having some good chats. We got Doug from Gravel Lot and Mr. David Palin from Bike Shop CX. They have the latest one. It was a fun conversation. Go check that out along with all of the other shows available for you to subscribe to at wideanglepodium.com. And once you're there and you're listening to it and we're part of your brain and your ears, think about becoming a member. That's how we continue to do what we do on the Wide Angle Podium, and we want you to be a part of it. All right, we're talking UCI rules. We're talking a little about Lil, so we get some racing action in there, and then we jump into the calendar for what we're looking at between the domestic calendar versus the European calendar. It's a lot stuffed into like an hour and 7 minutes, and we're going to do that right now. All right, here we are back in the pit. Michael's back. Michael, glad to have you back. Zach's here as well. I'm going to try to talk in coherent sentences. We're talking about the, I think we're going to go over those rules that we tabled last week and then maybe go a little bit through the schedule of what we have to look forward to for next season. But Zach, I think we're going to start out with Michael and let him catch us up from last week. Michael?
Well, you better bet some that I'm stoked to be back on the Media Pit. And I was just watching a little cross beforehand. And I want to say that I'm not ashamed to be sharing with y'all that I'm feeling a little love for Wout Van Aert after his big win last weekend.
Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Oh, wow. That was well done.
Dubendorf on golf.
Oh, no. Oh, there it is. Oh, man. A Tim Conway ref is like, that's perfect.
I don't know where I pulled that out of, but it came to me in the panic moments before we started recording this podcast.
Oh, I wish I had thought about that before, Worlds. The stuff we could have created with Dubendorf on cross.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people are like, what are you even talking about?
Go
Dorf
look up,
on golf. Go look it up.
Go look up Tim Conway and Dorf.
Oh, man.
That is great. I sat here and was like trying to think of a Wietze pun all day and just had nothing.
Well, I did think it was funny. I mean, I think inside the media pit, we have our team slogan for the year is keep it posy in 2020.
Yep.
And it's really weird because it's kind of coming true like multiple times now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. It's like, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Too many visits to the pharmacist, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is Wietse Busman is the guy that looks like a linebacker, right?
He's a pretty big dude, yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely non-steroids, yeah. Not at all.
He was the guy that gave me the rundown at he raced Nittany years ago and was explaining to me how American mud sucks. And it's nothing like Belgian mud. It was great. I'll have to find that interview because it was enlightening. Yeah.
Okay. Was it did he actually use all the weird words that come across like via Google Translate that they actually talk like with those words about it?
No, and he did, you know, his Google Translate today was it's a storm in a teacup or a water glass, storm in a water glass. So I think,
yeah,
I don't
that was
know,
weird.
Yeah, I don't know if that had anything to do with the mud, but it was great. He was just like, it just doesn't ride the same. You guys got shitty mud, basically, was I think the point he was making. And, you know, he still won, so.
Yeah.
There you go.
Those Belgian snobs, like, can't even just, our mud isn't even good enough for them either. Just, yeah. What can we do? I don't know. Yep.
The interesting thing with him is like, and we'll see what comes of this, but he also had the Lyme disease. And then I can tell you, like, one of the best treatments for Lyme disease is ozone treatment, which is what, like, all of the like Swix and Mason and that whole crew back in like 2013 got in trouble for. So if it comes up with that, I think he's got an ironclad, you know, excuse that he was just like furthering his Lyme disease treatments. But I don't know. I'm not as smart as, does he have Betsema's attorneys? Are they on this case?
He does.
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dude, they're just on, they're on retainer. Like,
oh yeah, they are. They are crushing it right now because they have the Dutch road racer too, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, if you're gonna have a niche, like, I mean, it comes up.
Well, aren't they the federation? Aren't they? Don't they work for like the Dutch Federation too? I think.
Oh, that's kind of dirty.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
That's kind of untoward, I'd say. But I mean, but right, like you need a niche, and so become an expert on cycling doping or doping law. I'm sure it happens in other sports too. Be like, hey, I'm your guy. Not a bad. I don't know. Maybe it's not. I'm assuming it's decent business.
Yeah.
I want to read this Google Translate just because you brought it up, Bill, because it's pretty hilarious. I am convinced that it is a storm in a glass of water.
That was it.
Since I have done nothing wrong. So the 28-year-old cruiser. Love Google Translate.
There you go.
All right.
What should we start with? What exciting? Which weeds should we crawl into first?
Do you guys want to talk a little bit about Lil? Or do we feel like we don't want to go?
Sure.
A little bit.
I didn't watch these races. Well, let's talk about the cyclocross elephant and the delirium tremens elephant in the room. That we were talking about in the green room a little bit, and this is hard to do on a cyclocross podcast, but kind of done with the season.
Yeah, it's I guess maybe I'm accustomed to the American sports, and I don't know, maybe soccer is the same way, but like when you have the championship race or the game, the Super Bowl, the World Series, it's done. Season's over. Like, I mean, you know, we got road season happening. Like, Tour of Colombia is happening right now. Like, I'm ready to watch some road racing. So it does kind of feel like, maybe I'm imagining this and maybe I'm just projecting my own feelings, but watching Will, it kind of seemed like some of the riders were just like, yeah, okay, a couple more weeks.
I think they certainly, without a doubt, they start mailing it in these last couple races. And in the past, this is the time that we've seen sort of these, the one cool thing I will say that comes out of these races at times is that we get to see the stars of the future. Like, I would not be surprised if, like, Thibaut Nace shows up in an elite race, right? I mean, that's the type of thing that we used to see. We were like, holy crap, who is this kid at the front of this race who's just crushing it? And I think one year was like Michael Van Turenout was like, just like everybody else was like, we're getting our start money, we're done. And then there was this little like blonde haired skinny kid who was just like, boom, out like a shot. You know, Easerbeat, the same thing. I think he did it when he was like, you know, 18, 19 years old. Wout Van Der Poel. This is kind of the time when all the young guns would shine. And then the next year we were like, oh, yeah, I remember them. I don't know if that's happening, but yeah.
I mean, so what you're saying is you want it to kind of be like the bizarro American sports preseason.
Yeah.
You know, like the bizarro American NFL preseason where, you know, the next level are the people that are on the cusp or the up and coming ones, but it's at the end of the season, not back in August or whatever.
Right. This is where we're seeing the Taco Falls of cyclocross.
Well, I mean, to your point, there was the woman who finished sixth, I think, in the women's race was some Dutch woman I'd never even heard of. I'm assuming a junior U23
and Sheeran. Sheeran was on the podium, right?
Yeah. So this should be like, you know, I don't. What was your pun? Be Sheeran her talents with the cyclocross world during this period.
Exactly. Yeah. I think, and that's. It was Annick van Alphen who was in sixth. You know, she's you know, bunny hopping the barriers and had some stronger rides this year. But I like that thought, Bill, and maybe that kind of energizes me into the, I think, two more weekends of cross to sort of look out for these up and comers and, you know, and be able to say, like, I knew them then.
Yeah, so we got the end of the Super Prestige this weekend coming up. And then so is then Waregem, like, in a week. And that's kind of just the... That's the one people really don't take it seriously. That's the night race. That's when you got the high jump competition happening. That's really just a parade, you know, and party.
Well, again, though, I mean, cycling doing its all-star game at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't this in, you know, why isn't this in after Copenberg or something?
Well, not
December,
even that.
You
have
know?
It, like, right after the World Championships. Do what the Tour de France does with all those, you know, fixed kermesses.
Post-tour crits.
Yeah, post-tour crits where, you know, all of a sudden, like, the Tour winner's winning a sprint stage, you know, and... to have everybody show off their new, you know, world stripes, rainbow stripes in races, and then let's call it a day. But I guess, who are we to say if people still want to show up and drink beer and eat Fritz and pay the 12 euros to get in, then I guess the promoters are going to still have those races. So I'm not going to say don't do it. I do think that especially this year, which we won't be doing next year, which we'll get into soon, but this year, starting in August with meaningful races, and it's now February. It's definitely a long haul.
Yeah, well, just speaking briefly about the new kits, I mean, that is kind of one of the fun things of the post-World Championship races. You had Alvarado showing off the rainbow stripes, looking strong, winning another gutsy. I mean, just that sprint was amazing. You know, once again, doubling down that she has it to do the sprint against worst. I mean, that's pretty rough. You also saw, like, who else? So Sana Kant in the Belgian national champion kit. Hadn't seen that in a while. I
completely forgot about that. Yeah, because she's not in her world. And that's always the I always peg that as the Sven philosophy, especially when he moved over to Krelin, him and when it was Sven, and they had those ugly green kits, where I swear it was like Sven's mission that he had to get at least one jersey, so he worked really hard to make sure he got the Belgian national jersey. So if he, you know, had one of those years, which he had many, where he just wasn't great at Worlds, he still had his fallback jersey, so he didn't actually have to go to the green Krelin jersey. And it was like that last year when he finally retired and you saw him in his trade team kit and you're like, oh man, now I know why you worked so hard all these years to stay out of this.
Well, I thought it was, I mean, I made note at the beginning of the race when Sana and KFC were together. I mean, you had Sana not in the world, the stripes, and you had, you know, Katie Compton in the trade kit and not in either the Pan Ams or the Stars and Stripes. So that was, you know, kind of interesting. And I think, you know, we don't use the term changing of the guard, but definitely kind of just a sense of where things are at right now. You had, you know, you have Yara Kesselin in the Euro kit, a very young, you know, another one of those young riders. So yeah, different things going on, especially on the women's side.
Yep. Nobody will be able to wear, no Dutch national elite kits will ever see the light of day.
No.
Because they're both world champs.
Oh yeah. I was thinking, okay, elite. Yep. Yeah, Vanderpool and Alvarado. Yeah, I guess, interesting though, you said changing the guard. I was thinking about Katie Compton's performance, you know, still kind of up there in the front of things thereabouts, really kind of making the case for, you know, a slip up at nationals, but really the strongest American, you know, over in Europe, just consistent. We got the news that sounds like she's not retiring. I don't know that if I never thought she would actually was going to retire next year, but I guess that's confirmed. She'll be back to racing again. So
yeah, I think, and Zach, you did some reporting on this too. The word we pretty much got from them all year long was for sure one more year and then not sure after that. I think that was kind of what they were going with all season.
I must have missed that.
Well, I guess the thing that's interesting, I mean, one of my first interviews that I did with her, we were talking about it, and you know, Bill was, are you going to do the Tim Duncan approach and just one, you know, season ends, you're just like, I'm done, we're good, you know, or do kind of like that season long farewell. And she had said that she wanted to do kind of like a season long, you know, everyone know, go to every race that, you know, one last time. So I don't know, reading that interview, it sounds like if she still has it, I think we're looking, I would guess the Fayetteville
might
year.
Be a farewell tour.
Yeah. That's what it seems
that makes
like.
Sense.
Yeah.
But it's still, I mean, again, it's, you know, she's still finishing fifth and maybe would have done if she hadn't, you know, ate it on that section of sand. Although it was funny seeing that one camera that was just like a blooper reel of like every lap, like someone eating it on that right hand turn or whatever.
Yeah, no, that.
But I mean, like 90% of people racing would trade with her in a heartbeat. So why should she retire?
Yeah.
If she can still do it, and she obviously loves it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, two thoughts on this. I think I already forgot one of them. Oh, one, I was just going to say, you could be like Jalen Rose, who's been out of the league for 13 years, still has not retired.
Okay. Is that because he has a crappy contract that someone is still paying him for?
I don't know what it is.
Because that guy, I could see that guy having a really bad contract that some team is still like paying him $2 million a year.
right. Yeah, and I don't know. I completely am blanking on this really amazing other point that I was. Oh no, I was going to talk Katarina Nash. Kind of in that.
Oh, that's right.
In the same little different vein, but I think that, you know, we've been kind of wondering what she's going to do from year to year, and even like the last year, you know, she was like, oh, I'll do a couple cyclocross races, and then she sort of called it a day. I was actually going back So I posted something just on her season and going back and looking at her cross results. And she used to race a ton of cyclocross. Like when USGP days, like she was unstoppable. You know, she was just winning everything, going to Europe, ending up on podiums there and just doing everything. And then this year she's, you know, has these great two first weeks in America and is kind of like just rewrites her whole season and says, well, I guess I'll, you know, go to Europe. And she ended up doing like the whole World Cup thing. And it was, that was completely not planned. But for her now she's like, nah, not really sure. You know, she was like, this is the first year. I'm not really sure what I'm doing next year or if I want to do it at all, but who knows, you know, come talk to me in 4 months. We'll see how it is.
Yeah, that was a great article, Bill. I really enjoyed reading it. And if you haven't checked it out, go check it out. Because, you know, it's your photos and you travel with her a lot. You're a friend. It just that relationship came across in the post. And I thought it made it even more enjoyable. So,
yeah, thanks. And what I really liked about it is she's really good at seeing those little stories in there. Like she has this great story about showing up just at a, you know, local Czech race and just what happened
that
there.
So
and
cool.
That's the kind of stuff. And I know, Zach, when you're interviewing people, you've heard enough of them talk about giving, you know, everybody gave 100% and it was a really good race and this and that. But when you get those little nuggets like that, that's when it really pays off.
For sure. Yeah. Other end of the I guess the spectrum though, you know, another story that came out of having this race was Wout.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Yeah, gosh, how can we not
Duke
even mention
seemed like
that
was like one of the biggest wins of his career.
Right.
You know, what a great story to come out of that. So I mean, just what a great way for him to finish his cross season and to hear him say, hey, I was kind of doubting myself a little bit that I could still do this. And this win means, you know, this win means a lot.
Yeah. No, it's such a great story. It's really, do you think, Michael, that we've changed our, like, how we look at Wout? I mean, with this injury and everything, he's sort of become this sympathetic character where, you know, we can go back, you know, to, you know, like if we talk about like our slow ride friends where Tim, you know, Super Rookie was always on this anybody but Wout thing for like a couple years, and they just sort of like,
man,
painted him as the villain, and now he's
Super Rookie always got that so wrong. when he started saying that, I'm like, dude, you came in like, it's like Donnie, you can't like walk into a movie halfway and like start asking questions. Like you just missed it. It's actually, it has been Vanderpool. It's always been Vanderpool. Wout just was lucky because Vanderpool was injured. So I actually always think that Vanderpool is the sympathetic one. I've said it on this podcast. I always think that Wout, sorry, not sorry. I think Wout is sympathetic. He to me, he's the everyman. You know, I say he sort of wears his emotions on his face, and Vanderpool is the sort of the uber athlete,
cyborg,
you know, that stands above everybody. The what?
The cyborg.
Exactly. So this win obviously is like, has that much more like emotion to it. And I mean, the GCN broadcast, you had Marty McDonald, you know, called it out, called a shot like halfway during the race and said like, Wout's going to win. And Jay Powell's like, well, I don't know about that. And then Marty's like, if he wins, I might just tear up over here. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's great to see, great story. And I'm going to go back to this. Well, you know, this was a chance for Sweek to prove that he was elite. Beat Wout in a cross race. Wout was there. Tone was there. Like everybody was there. And he went out so hard in the Belgian national champion kit, and he got pipped at the line by Tone. Like, no, you are not elite if you can't even like, you can't even beat Tone in that sprint. I mean, like, he tried to shut the door. I don't know. Sorry, I could go on for days with this, and I know that like I've like made this whole thing up about Sweek being elite.
Oh no, no, it's wonderful.
No, it's a question. You didn't make a decision. It's a question.
Yeah, and you're pissing people off. It's beautiful.
I mean,
oh.
We'll see, right? Like you said, I think he leads the Super Prestige by one point
over Easer Beep.
Yeah, so I mean, next week when we come back, we'll probably be having the same conversation. He's not going to win. Like,
all right. So we have two memes we have to create now. We got the Dubendorf on Cross and the is Swick Elite.
So just to let you guys know, I did have to Google, does Joe Flacco still play football? And he does. He plays. He's a quarterback for the Broncos.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, that's where old quarterbacks go to just hang out. I mean, old
are you tall and do you have a strong arm? Yeah. John Elway's gonna hire you. That's kind of how it works.
Okay. So yeah, Lil. That's Lil Bill.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on? Should we get into the main event? Maybe that was the main event. We'll see what happens. But we've got rules talk. You know, Bill has established himself as the rules guru of cyclocross. Both in America, I even got a one up on cyclocross 24 guy. I mean, you are the man. So let's do some rule talk.
Yeah, let's do it. So every time about this. Actually, right around World Championships, because I think what it comes out of the UCI has their committee meetings at Cyclocross World Championships where they decide a lot of important stuff. You know, we saw some of it with the everything from the independent doping agency that's changing over to, you know. Like last year, for instance, it was the Olympics of cycling that was announced during this time. You know, this whole festival thing. Is that still happening? Mm. Like in London with the...
I think it's next year.
Next year, where all the
world... Glasgow, huh?
Oh, Glasgow. Yeah, I think it was 21-ish. So okay. It might be 2 years.
Yeah, so that kind of stuff is announced. But the thing that affects us and... one, as Zach, you know, pipped me last year, the World Championship is announced right before World Championship. So you got the like Fayetteville.
Well, it was out there. Yeah, I mean, it was out there. I think actually, Andrew did that post and did like the deep dive or whatever. But
But then also we at the same time, and this came out on when did it come out? January. No, February 3rd, I think. Is that right? I don't know.
The rules? Yeah, February 3rd. That's the date on the document.
Yeah, February 3rd, they announce it, and it's always these amendments to Part 5 of the UCI regulations, which are the cyclocross rules. Sometimes we get some really cool ones in there. Sometimes it's not really that big a deal. You know, such highlights in the past as no 180s and... and pit rules and all of this other kind of stuff.
Greatest hits. Didn't that inspire an entire podcast? They don't do that in Europe.
Yes. Okay. So let's see. First thing that, you know, we had to make a lot of changes to put in things. One, you know, when we get to the World Cup stuff, and I really didn't even document a lot of this. It changed from World Cup decision to the World Cup, like, licensee making the decision. So that's, you know, changing all the rules to make the Flanders group the decider in a lot of these.
The decider.
Yes, in a lot of these different areas.
Passing the buck.
Yeah. Also adding junior women into it. That was a big part of this. As well, so that's, you know, the first change that's even in here. 5.1001 is junior women racing, having a junior women racing category in all UCI events, and then there's, you know, some stuff in there where they're still stuffing all of the women's categories together. If you want to do that, you can, other than at World Championships, even at World Cup events, if you want to have all of your junior women category or women categories, elite, U23, junior, you can put them all in there. And just as an aside, we heard a lot of adoration for the size of women's fields this year, and I think especially in the World Cup races, that was something that people weren't exactly grasping, that wasn't necessarily a good thing. but it was that they were stuffing all of these categories into one race time instead of breaking them out into three categories, which happens on the men's side, where you have, you know, the men, the U23 men, and the junior men, and then you just had the U23 women and the elite women together. And next year, we may have races where we have the junior women thrown in there too. So it's going to look awesome. We're going to have 100 women out there. But it also sucks at the same time because they should all have their own races. Let's get to kind of the big ones that affect us in North America. And I think the biggest one we had... kind of a crisis, I think, in the U.S. last year, where we lost most of our C1 races, right? I mean, that it sort of changed the composition of the whole calendar. What did we have? Three C1 races. We had Iowa, we had Rochester, and we had Cincinnati. At the end of this year, it looked like we were going to lose Cincinnati as well because they did not meet the requirements. And then we see the schedule, Zach, and what happened?
I mean, well, so we first looked at it and it was like, I think we were talking and I was like, hey, like Charm City's a C1 and Cincinnati's a C1 and now we have four. But if you look at as of recording, also Jingle Cross has two. So according to the schedule, we have five UCI
five.
C1s this coming season.
Yeah, so Rochester is
TBD.
Yeah,
Rochester returns. But yeah, I think it was surprising because we had just kind of expected, you know, to lose King CX. And, you know, Chris Auer, to his credit, apparently is just like, I'm going to apply for a C1 until they give me one. And but the rule change was what was really bizarre, Bill. Like,
yeah, and this is what it is. So we have just this huge red line through most of the rule. And this is 5.1.004. And the old rule used to say you'd get a C1 if you had at least 10 foreign starters representing at least five different nationalities, and these numbers being calculated cumulatively with the official start list for the men's elite, women, and when appropriate, men's under 23 races. So you had to have the 10 foreign starters and the five different nationalities. And what we talked about in the U.S. and North America, this isn't easy. We don't have, you know, 15 different countries within 300 miles of us that we can bring that all in. So that was really hard. This year we see the rules. All that's just been redlined. It's just gone. It's just disappeared from the rules. The rule is now an event will only be given or maintain class one status if the previous season's race does not present any major organizational issues and following the UCI's approval. That's the most vague rule you could actually come up with. Awesome. Great. Thank you very much, UCI. We can now have C1s again.
We can pay them more money, is what you're saying.
Yes, we can pay them more money, and then people can get more points. Okay. Which brings us right into the next really big area. I'm going to skip ahead here just because I think this is another important one that people need to be aware of, especially when it comes to racers, is that we used to have what I think we refer to, at least the three of us refer to, as the bucket system, right?
No, athletes call it that too. Yeah, it's the bucket system.
Yeah, they call it the bucket, which means that you have like your C1 bucket and your C2 bucket. And how your UCI ranking was calculated was that you would take your best six C1 results and your best eight C2 results, and those combined would be your UCI ranking, right?
Well, with the World Cups, all the World Cups,
with the World Cups and everything else, right? But as far as C1s and C2s went, it was just six C1s, eight C2s. So if you're somebody, let's say, you know, and this, I'll bring it back to Jeremy Powers because that's a good example. If he came in and he raced four C2 weekends and he swept them, he didn't necessarily want to show up for any more C2 races because he could not get any, it would not improve his ranking at all by racing in those races. It would, you know, if he gets to first place, it's just knocking out another first place. It doesn't do him any better. Now they've gotten rid of that system completely, and all results are now taken into consideration for your UCI ranking. So you're getting points for every time you line up if you're up there. So if you win all the races, you're getting all of those points, which can, for North American racers, A, that's huge for them because that helps them in the overall rankings. But where it's even bigger, at least from where I sit, is for North American race organizers. Because now you can have a late season C2 that in the past, the best riders in the country are like, we're really sorry, we love your event, but our C2 bucket's already full. There's really no reason for us to go to our event. We'd rather take the week off, rest, and then go to Nationals. Now it's something where they can go to that and it still benefits them. So from a selfish point of view, at least in North America, I think it's a great rule change.
Yeah, it's interesting because, and not this year, but you would see last year, Vanderpool would race like every freaking race, right? So I'm just looking at that side. So he just gets to make his tally any bigger. I don't know. I haven't really fully thought through this issue, but I mean.
But for him, it's money. And that's the difference, yeah. Right? Like he's getting start money. He has contracts for series. It's like a whole different calculation, Europe versus North America, as far as what your motivation is to race, especially when you're at that level.
But does it mean that the Americans might get more points, but they'll still be at the same spot when they go to Europe because the Europeans are also getting the additional buckets or the additional races?
So to an extent, off the top of my head, like when this came up, I just looked at it and like Tone Arts had like 7 C1s that weren't counted in his score this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that's the thing is they're like, they have C1s every single weekend. And so I think internationally, I think Bill, to your point, it's going to make a difference domestically. But I, you know, there's just so many C1s. I mean, that's my initial read. I haven't done, I don't know, maybe it's time to do another mathy, science-y investigation. Yes. To see how this affects things. But
yep.
my quick and dirty was like, holy cow, Tone Arts has like 7 C1s that are just gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it'll reward, I mean, that's cool though, but it'll definitely reward the riders who race cross, which is good.
Yeah, you know, and I think it maybe in the with the U.S. it's kind of the same way everywhere. It's going to be the same riders getting the same points, but you know,
right.
We'll see how it all shakes out. But here's the interesting thing: is that we always talk about what's the meaning of points anymore, especially with the changes in the World Cups and how they're distributed. They've just gone, you know, like last year we had this change where the first three rows of the World Cups, where it used to be by UCI ranking, where this whole system we just talked about would help, especially North Americans, and we had seen that in the past where they'd show up in the front row because they were just able to just pound points, you know, in these early season races. And then this year they said, okay, first three rows of the World Cup are going to be based on World Cup points. So then that really took a lot of the North Americans out of the picture because they were not traveling for those early, other than the U.S. World Cups. So they were high there, but once the European early season ones started, most of them were staying at home. So they weren't going to those, and then they were falling out of those first three rows. They've completely revamped this again. They've
right.
kind of thrown out that system and actually going to start because this is just how they have it listed for the World Championships. World Championships used to be the one thing that you still wanted to have all the points because that's going to determine where you are. Like Clara Hansinger, right? Front row, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Because she had all the UCI points to be on the front row of the World Championships. This coming year, she needs World Cup points to be on that front row.
Wait,
Worlds.
What?
Yep.
Are you serious?
The first eight riders, the World Championships, the first eight riders of the most recently published UCI Cyclocross World Cup standings of the current season. So first row, World Cup standings, which means, and look what they're trying to do. UCI especially selling this to Flanders, is trying to make the World Cup the most important thing in cyclocross, right? 14 races, more points. It is like the most important thing out there. Part of that has been the incentive for the World Championships on top of that, which did not exist before. So first row of World Championships is now the top eight in the World Cup. And then after that, so second row on, you're going to go UCI ranking.
Well, let's just look at this year, and let's it would have been Wurst, Alvarado, Nash, Vanderheiden, Compton, Rochette, Brand, and Kay. So it's interesting, this year we had two World Cups in the States, but the women who'd placed well in those initial World Cups actually held on to their points, and they would be in the front this year. We'll probably talk about it. There's only one World Cup. So, yeah, just to kind of give an example of how that would play out.
Yeah. To me, it kind of reeks of a rule that's going to last a year.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the kind of thing that's going to last. Like, they're going to revisit it. There's going to be complaints. And they're just, this just reeks of something that's not going to last.
Yeah.
But it's a thing this year because they're trying to force. Riders, because Flanders paid so much money, we don't know. No one knows because it's the UCI, like what the story of the deal is. But, you know, it just seems like, yeah, like you said, they're going to try to force people to race their World Cups.
Yeah. I don't know if you'll be happy about this or not, Zach, but the collegiate ranking for the junior races, gone. That's just.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
That's all been redlined. So that's all. Okay. This whole, you know. One Dutch, one Belgian, one American.
It is much easier for European women. I mean, I think that'll create, you know, at least for, I mean, who will be, I mean, I guess Lizzie will be, you know, that's going to create definitely a need for USA Cycling to support her so she can get UCI points, Basically, like you said, it's a local series race for all the other, you know, Belgian and Dutch women to a lesser extent to be able to just rack up UCI points.
Especially too, if these races decide they're going to have UCI junior women's races in Europe and we don't have them in the US.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's also another place where they're getting first place points. Right. So it's even bigger from there.
Yeah.
If we move down to the World Cup, there's a big line through 24, which would be the first three rows, and that's been similar to the World Championships. We're going with the top eight again. So first row is the top eight in the World Cup. Now, interestingly, second and third row, they've gotten rid of the World Cup, so it's not the top 24 anymore. It's just the top eight, and then we go back to UCI rankings for the second and the third rows. So 8 through 16, and then, yeah, up until 24, 8 through 24 is going to be by UCI ranking. So, again, our North American friends, I think that's good for them. That sort of gets them back with a possibility to get back into that second or third row, where I think this year a lot of them, you know, once they weren't at World Cups, were stuck in that fourth row. The fourth row is where the wild cards come in. So that fourth row of the race is reserved for anybody who wants to show up, who is in either from first to 24th place in the mountain bike cross country or the road world rankings. That's your fourth row.
Isn't it top 50?
Top 24.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I read that wrong. Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't think the US ones, or I don't think Trek, or even where can we start this? Dublin, or do we even go for like the first Belgian one? I want the over under for how many road and mountain bike top 25 athletes are going to take advantage of this, you know, honor of being in the fourth row of a cyclocross World Cup.
Well,
I say the over under is 2 or 3.
I'm going to go with the under. But, you know, there's one person who's in the top 24 of the road rankings who I think would show up.
That's Vanderpool.
To a World Cup. Vanderpool, exactly.
But does that even, I mean.
No, because he would be number one ranked, so he would be, if he skipped the States World Cups, he would still be in the second row.
Right.
Maybe Sagan, ranked right behind Mr. Vanderpool right now.
But we saw some random roadies. I mean, I think you could see it around, like, well, Zolder's gone, though. I don't think they're going to want to do Namur. So maybe for some of those December races, right, before training camp or around training camp, for them just to be like, hey,
do you have the rankings up, Michael? Where's Lars Forster? Switzerland.
Oh,
men's.
He's not in the top 24.
Yeah, so there's somebody who I'm pretty sure is in that, probably in that range for mountain biking, yet he's the Swiss national champ for cyclocross.
Oh, wait, I'm looking at road. I can look at mountain biking. I'll look it up. Keep talking.
Yeah, so he's somebody that maybe, he's like the one candidate that I see right now who already races cyclocross, but may not be high enough in the cyclocross rankings where that fourth row, that may be a step up for him.
He's 14th. So
in mountain biking?
Mountain biking, UCI.
Where is he in cyclocross?
Oh, I didn't know he was cyclocross. Let's see.
Yeah.
Scrolls down.
Oh, he's a Swiss champ. He's got to get some points for that.
That has nice. Yeah, that has some nice points for it. So.
I don't have the cyclocross up. I was looking at the road. I was trying to come in with the road hot tips. Keep talking. I'll pull them up, though.
Okay.
Well, but like, so, I mean, the wild card they had suggested, I think, when it initially drops, like, that's a pretty watered down version of what they had initially suggested, because they were like, hey, we might put these guys on, like, the second row or, like, the first row or something. Like, you know, so it seems like they've kind of backed off to me, based on what it was when it was first brought up and we joked about it, I think, on the podcast, kind of watered down. You know, fourth row is not necessarily, I don't know. I wouldn't get as excited about a fourth row start.
Lars is 90th in cyclocross.
Yeah.
So he can cash in that little token. I mean, any race, he can just move on up.
Yeah. And their guy, like Lucas Flukiger, is 79th. Yeah. Nicola Rohrbach. All the Swiss guys are just the mountain bikers in here.
Well, so we also, I mean, related to that, we haven't even gotten to the Belgi Buster, the anti-Belgian.
Cool. So there is this rule in here that Belgian athletes were claiming that the UCI was anti-Belgian when it came to cyclocross, which is kind of the ironies of ironies, I think, after they get like half of the World Cup selections and everything's kind of geared towards Belgium. So what used to be the rule is that if you were in the top 50 of the UCI rankings, you had a golden ticket for World Cups. There was nothing your federation could say. If you were in that top 50, you got to race. If there was 17 Belgian men in the top 50 and all of them wanted to race to World Cup, all of them were able to race to World Cup. And that's kind of the situation that we would see. And what they have done is that they have maxed out the number of spots each federation has. If you are the best country in the world, the most you can have is 12. And how it works is that they now consider anybody in the top 50 as pre-qualified. So if you're in that top 50, you are pre-qualified, but you don't necessarily have to be selected. So for instance, the most spots you can have, a federation having 11 or more, that's where it maxes out, 11 or more pre-qualified riders will select 8 best-ranked riders and 4 riders of choice. So even if you're 9, 10, and 11, like if you're the 9th, 10th, 11th Belgian and you're in the top 50, you won't necessarily be selected by the federation. They could just skip over you and pick somebody else. So there were guys out there who were like, hey, I've done all this work, gotten all these points, gotten into the top 50, and now I'm not guaranteed a spot in the World Cup, which, you know, if you're trying to find a team or you're trying to find sponsors, that's huge. So that's why a lot of the Belgian riders who were in that position but might not now have to compete against their teammates are a little pissed by that. And what happens is that it's this tiered system. So at the most, it's 11 or more pre-qualified. You'll get 8 riders and 4 of choice, 12 for that team, and then it just goes down from there. You know, 10 pre-qualified riders. So if you are a federation with 10 in the top 50, you get to pick your 8 best rankers and 3 riders. And then, you know, down from there, if you have 9, you only get to pick 2 riders. So you have 11 and then down to 9 and down from there. If you have 0 pre-qualified riders, nobody in the top 50, you're still allowed to bring 8 riders. And I think that's the part, too, that, you know, may be rubbing better federations the wrong way. Although I always think it's been like that, and you could just have these huge fields. But I think it's more now that at the top, they're not allowed to just bring 30 riders. So that's a big change, too, as far as World Cups go.
What do you think brought about this rule change?
I think that this one may have been trying to, you know, they always want to talk about globalization, and maybe this is where you start. I mean, maybe this is to try to get different mixes of countries in there. I don't think it works. I mean, look how cyclocross works. You're still going to get that select group. It could just all be Belgians still, you know, and Vanderpool if he decides to show up. So I'm not sure that really solves anything. Maybe it makes the fields not as large. But again, I'm not sure that that was really an issue in the World Cup races this year either. I don't know. Any thoughts on that, Zach?
I don't know. Because World Cups don't pay start money, right? I mean, it's so...
Yeah.
It seems like a solution to a problem that we can't really identify off the top of our heads.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe they want, like, other riders will get better numerical results because, you know, a lot of countries are still not beating, like, the 17th best Belgian or whatever. I don't know. I'm at a loss.
Yeah.
You know, you'll get better results. Like you said, smaller fields, but hey, instead of finishing 35th, you'll finish 27th. Like, cool.
And I think that, Zach, you bring up a great point that sort of was at the heart of all of this. Again, the Belgians, a faction of the Belgians at least, really upset about this new World Cup schedule with 14 World Cups on there that are going to take away from series, is that a lot of these riders make their money on start money, and that this having to do all of these World Cups and kind of being strong-armed, as we're reading now, through these rules to have to do them, that they're losing money. And that was kind of that's one of the growing pains, right, that we're dealing with in this new environment with this expanded World Cup.
Well, and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with still doing journalism speak, interesting. What's going to happen with the Super Prestige and the DBV series?
Yeah.
Because you've got to imagine that they're going to lose money. And so you've got to imagine start contracts are going to go down. You know, I mean, they're all on Saturdays. Like, they're all on Saturdays. And so you can't, you know, it's turning, you know, the World Cup used to usually got a chance to kind of go pre-ride and it was a big event. And it's turning into one-offs, you know, where it's like you show up day of and you race. And so, you know, are the riders going to do those Saturday races? You know, are these races going to have the money to pay Vanderpool to come race his race, or, you know, pay Alvarado to come race their race? And are they going to want to? I think, you know, the World Cup is the World Cup. But man, if I'm running the Super Prestige or the DBV series, I'm like, I'm freaking out right now. There's so much uncertainty with those series.
Yeah. Have we seen anything from them, like announcing schedules or any sort of word about how this affects their series?
Like, Zolder is like a DVV race this year. Or like, it's one of the two series, which is kind of crazy. There was some news about what races were being added and stuff like that, but I don't have like the official word in terms of what's happening, because obviously they've lost like Degum and some other ones. So, I mean, that'll be a thing to watch. And, you know, It's kind of a bummer. I mean, like, the organizers of those series, the sponsor of those series, have kind of been strong-armed out by Flanders Classics. All right. So, I mean, we think that these rules are going to... They're obviously having an effect on the change in the U.S. schedule. I mean, we're seeing the World Cup. We have one World Cup, and that's moved to the beginning of October. But we have a number of UCI C1s. So I'll start with this. I mean, if the schedule holds as it is, we're looking at Charm on September 20th being a C1, Rochester the next weekend on Saturday the 26th of September being a C1, the Trek World Cup, and then supposedly the two Jingle Cross C1s on the 9th and 10th of October. So yeah, let's assume they get one, and this is a mistake.
Stuck in there too, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, so, you know, one thing with, we looked at the C1s last year, I felt like we had really, for our domestic riders, in a lot of ways, one and a half, right? Like, because the Jingle Cross one took place during a World Cup weekend, and so the Euros, who decided to race, kind of cleaned up, well, at least on the men's side. I mean, I guess, as we've seen, the American women and North American women aren't necessarily, you know, we're kind of kicking butt. But now you're looking at the situation where if you're a brother, if you're one of the brothers in the brotherly race, or, you know, Tom Mason, the privateer by himself or whatever, like, you could do a four weekend trip to the U.S. and, like, crush it and score a ton of C1 points. And I just kind of wonder, you know, will this lead to some Euro privateers, you know? Well, essentially, the only North American C1 be King CX to some extent.
Right.
If that makes sense. Like, because if I'm looking that, if I'm, you know, I did it last year, Dieter Swack, like, if I'm Gianni, if I'm Vincent, our boy Vincent Bastions, hey, come the week before, do the World Cup, whatever, and then stay the next weekend.
I just wonder how many will do that with only one World Cup here. Like, how many are going to make that commitment? I don't know. I mean, I guess it's kind of, there's an appeal to that. Do we have, you know what I'm not seeing on here, where riders would go the other direction? I don't see any China.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Maybe they ran out of money or something. I don't know.
Yeah, because wasn't that that was the other track where people would go, even like Fields of Joy and then to China, like the Squid Squad did. But there were like Belgians and some Dutch who would do that too, yeah, to try to like grab points, yeah, in those races.
Hey, you know what I think they're doing? I'm just going to throw it out there. They're probably hosting a gravel race this year. I mean, cyclocross is done.
Yeah.
So I, you know, watch them like end up paying Colin Strickland and Peter Stetna and Sarah Sturm and Amity Rockwell to actually go over there and race gravel. I think that's what's going to happen.
I think you might be right.
I love it, Zach. That's so good.
Well, yeah, I mean, so facetiousness aside, I mean, we do, you know, so what this year, kind of what happened, right? Like this past year, we had Rochester, we had the World Cups, really exciting. I think some of that hype played through to Fayetteville. And then, I don't know, I think it seems like things took a lull. And even though we had the C1 at King CX, I think that really the peak of the season really happened at like Fayette Cross. And, you know, I don't, what do you think? Do you think that, I mean, this is still pretty front loaded though with, yeah, C1s.
Well, here's the crazy thing. I mean, if we just take one like quick step back and look at this internationally, we have something that we have not seen in the past several years. I think since there have been World Cups in North America. I mean, in the past, it would be like one Belgian prep race, right? Like, mm-hmm, there was like one race in Belgium and then everybody scooted over to the U.S. This year, with the World Cup being not in the summer, but, you know, backed up into, where are we looking at, in October, you have Rape and Cross, which is a C2. You have Eclo Cross, which is a C2 in Belgium. You have Castile Cross, Zonnebeke, which is a C2. You have Leuven, which is a C1. All of these happening, like, they can get, you can get like a true third of a season in before that first World Cup even happens, which means that the Belgies that do come over for Waterloo, not to say that they haven't been flying already, but all of them complain like those races, they don't want to do that. It was predominantly with Jingle Cross. They didn't want to do that hard of a race that early in the season. They're kind of going to be flying now by the time they come over here. It's not going to be this preseason anymore. They're going to be kind of right in the heart of the season where they're primed and ready to go. So I think for the people that we do see coming over to the U.S., we're going to see them in a little different level of fitness than I think that we've experienced in the past.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the other thing, too, though, is how many of them are going to come. Because just looking, the first Super Prestige is Heaton, and that's the week after. That's the week of Jingle Cross. So, you know, I think for a lot of the riders who are racing at that time of year doing those full series, the DVV and the Super Prestige is pretty important to them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's kind of like the elephant in the room, too, right? Is
14 races.
In terms. Yeah, so it's
you
like,
don't need
what
one.
Are we going to see? Yeah, and it's a big trip. Most of them don't really like it. I mean, they've said as much. Like, you know, good time to be on the whatever whoever's sponsoring the Lions next year. I mean, we can assume that they'll be there.
Yep.
Whatever their team is called, but you know, good points opportunity. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think you're even looking at them waiting 2 weeks and everybody kind of starting their World Cup season in Dublin.
Yeah, if even Dublin, you know, if not right. Just waiting to Zonhoven, like, yeah. You know, we don't know.
Well, you know that, so right, so it's like, it's 14 races, you don't need to do that many, and then you are going to get someone, it's going to be that like start, that start line creep, where someone creeps up a little bit, someone else has to creep up, so you know, you might get, like you said, some of those more Belgian riders who are a little bit lower who are like, you know what, actually I am going to take advantage of all of these points out here. And then you could see, you know, schedules get tossed around, people like, hey, yeah, I'm also going, like, maybe we do have a full Dublin, you know, like everybody's there, and you've, you know, got some I don't know, some cross point pirates coming over to the U.S. to take advantage of that.
You know, the other side of that coin is that it's a good opportunity for North American riders to get that jump on that first World Cup and then kind of maybe rearrange their season in that they're going to Dublin, you know, if they're on those first couple rows and they're sort of point seeking then, and that's the trip, you know, you go there, maybe even stick around for a Zonhoven, and then you come back to the U.S. and do a domestic schedule. So it could work that way as well, where, you know, there are a lot of spots available for Waterloo, and then you're kind of set up to have a good showing over in Dublin. So if everybody is taking those first couple races off, then I think it opens up that opportunity for more North American riders to take advantage.
Yeah, I mean, look at, you know, Charm City's now in September, C1. You know, I mean, just happened last year, the American domestic season, like, comes out and hits hard and, like, goes, like, strong. So, like, talk about Belgian riders being strong. I mean, the Americans will be coming to the Trek Cup swinging as well. I mean, we kind of know how that plays out, but, you know, it's going to be really interesting to watch how this plays out next year. I don't know. I'll definitely be seeing you guys at Trek, that's for sure.
Yeah. For sure. Anything? Okay, let's keep moving through here, Zach. Where are we going next?
Well, I getting back to just like the ebbs and flows. I mean, we're looking at we're looking at October peak. I mean, right? We're looking at like Jingle Cross, then, you know, Kings happens, but then there's a week off, and I think that was something that was just really hurt cyclocross here in the U.S. North America last year was just after. I mean, I don't even think Pan Am's had the hype necessarily that it's had in previous years. Like, you know, we just, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with those races after Pan Am's. You know, there's a tough spot. I think, Michael, you might have made the point, though, that, like, Major Taylor, definitely we're in a good spot going into Nationals, at least. So it looks like we might get, you know, if everyone shows up at Major Taylor to race the weekend before Nationals or whatever, we could get that. But I don't know. It's looking like another kind of lully You know, especially there's those World Cups, and so some of the top riders may do like they kind of used to do, where they did those strong Thanksgiving period blocks and come back and race Nats. I don't know.
What I like about the UCI calendar is that the rogue U.S. national championship is not on it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And that is it's kind of interesting, and I think USA Cycling has kind of put the line in the sand and said, this is when we're having our nationals. And I'm pretty sure UCI is like, nobody can have nationals except on nationals date. And the US is like, we're having it on a different date. And if you just want to kick us out of the UCI, then go for it. But I do think that challenge has been put out there. So it's kind of interesting. We're kind of standing up to the governing body here. All right, guys. Michael, what you got going on? Where can people get a hold of you?
I'm traveling to the Midwest. I'm pretty excited about this Midwest traveling I've been doing. But you can get I had a pun in there somewhere, and I forgot it. So I went to Madigan, Wisconsin.
Okay. There it is.
Wait, where?
Sorry. Okay. You guys edit this out. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at LandSoftly. You can also find me on Instagram. You can also find me on Instagram at LandSoftly, and you can find me at Yeah You Ride. It is time to post some more photos. I haven't shot a race in forever. I'm just gonna start posting old stuff to get hype for next season.
Was that a strained pun for Madison?
Okay. Yes.
Wait, you were in Madison?
I know.
Hey, you're going to Milwaukee.
I'm going to Wisconsin this week, but
you're going
I
to
wanted
Milwaukee.
To say, yeah, but Madigan is closer to Madison than this to Milwaukee.
So bad. So bad.
Madigan Monroe, come on. Come on. Madigan, Wisconsin.
No.
I was really close to Canada.
Stop. Close.
When I was in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan.
Oh, God. Zach Schuster, hobby blogger. What you got going on?
I'm on Twitter. I'm at the Schuster. Maybe I'll write some stuff for CX Hairs.
Sweet.
Check the website.
The home of hobby blogging. Should I put that up as the new...
I feel it's weird. I like... As no longer being an official quote-unquote journalist, I feel liberated being a hobby blogger. And yet, when I sit down to write, I'm just like, I can't do this right now. Like, I just, for whatever reason, can't make it happen. So I gotta solve this existential crisis I'm experiencing right now.
Yeah. It's okay. Just take your time. It's no rush. You can find me at CX Hairs on all social media. Also go check out at Garage Races. We have our underground series that's starting up in March. So if you're in the Mid-Atlantic or you just want to travel to DC on a random Tuesday night in March, we got the best underground racing and happy hour series in the world. And you should check it out. That's all I got.
All right. It's been fun. Yeah. Back in the media,
I am
going to
be editing my ass off. All right, I'm hitting.